Hello, hello, this is Decibel sitting down with Ulysses, one of the co-founders of Santa Monica Lounge. And how are you doing?
Good, Decibel. Thanks for having me today.
It's an honor to be here with you. So tell me real quickly, Santa Monica Lounge, how is it different than other lairs?
Well, Santa Monica Lounge started back in 2005 when the other co-founder and myself met at an RSD Super Seminar back at the old Project Hollywood, you know, the same Project Hollywood that people read about in the game. And it's very similar to, you know, lairs like Casanova Crew, which I think is a fantastic group and lair as well. We've just been around since 2005, and one of the things that I like about the Santa Monica Lounge as well as I like about the Casanova Crew is that a lot of the guys who are active on the board also know each other personally. So there's not a lot of BS and flaming going back and forth. It's hard to flame somebody when you've actually met them in person, have gone out with them, have supported them, and, you know, helped them become a better man in the field and otherwise. So to both, when I look at either the Santa Monica Lounge or the Casanova Crew, I see really two really high quality communities. They're separate entities of each other. We just happen to keep it separate because we just found it separately. But, you know, I think they're both great places to be in.
Is there maybe more of a inner game type of spin with these organizations?
I'd say with both there are, actually, because I've lurked both boards and I lurk several other boards. And I think one thing about the Santa Monica Lounge is most of us have been in the game for some time, and a lot of us are well into our 30s, and some of us in our 40s, and I think we even have a couple guys in our 50s. And just like the Casanova Crew, it's all walks of life, and, you know, it's a little bit of both, really. There's field reports, just like every other board out there. I think the things that really make certain lairs effective, such as the Casanova Crew lairs, or the Forum, as well as the Santa Monica Lounge Forum, is the interconnectedness that exists within the members, the fact that we know each other face-to-face, and, you know, the fact that we've all gone out and had experience together. I think that really builds a tighter community and makes for a higher quality environment for people to post and to share their experiences in. So, yeah.
All right, excellent. Let's get down to the meat of it. Now, you're well known for giving a lot of advice on social skills, the basics and fundamentals and the importance of these. So elaborate a little bit about the importance of social skills and how they work into seduction.
Absolutely, Evan. Well, back in 2005, when I first, I guess, officially got in the game, when I met Chongo at the Super Seminar at Project Hollywood, you know, that's when I really started to get out there and apply the theories and principles that people have read about in the game. Now, prior to that, when I was 18 years old, I actually read this book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers. And at the age of 18, I didn't have really that many friends. I definitely didn't have a girlfriend. I was still a virgin, probably well into my 20s, actually. I'm reticent to admit, but it's true. And as soon as I got in the game, I met a whole new, interesting group of people, you know, like these guys who went out and dressed up and didn't drink and used all these interesting lines and routines to basically press certain buttons to elicit certain reactions within the opposite sex. What I found was, though, as someone who's been a pretty social person for, I'd say, most of my adult life, given what I do, given my professional life, is that a lot of the guys that I was meeting in the game were really masters of certain routines and certain buttons to push. But when it just came down to vibing and just hanging out, especially with non-community people and women, that a lot of the guys came off a little off, or maybe just a little weird, and there was something off about them. And I started hearing complaints from girls, like, what's with that guy? You know, there's something off about him. I can't quite put my finger on it. There's just something going on there. And as I explored this topic further, I realized that what a lot of guys are missing, especially if they're in the game, is just the basic foundational social skills that make people successful in life. You know, now, to give you a little bit of background, I've been a professional salesperson since I graduated from college. And all my time professionally has been spent in front of other people. So by using my voice and my persuasive skills, I realized indirectly the importance of, you know, having a good vocal tonality, a good presence, a good body language. And, you know, as many boot camps as I've taken, you know, from these various organizations, which are all great, by the way, I think they teach great stuff, what I found was a lot of them were really skipping on the basics. And without the basics and the foundations, such as your handshake, your eye contact, your voice tonality, you know, just your overall vibe and your presence and charisma, all this high-level material isn't going to work. So we started Social Fundamentals, Chongo and me, and we teach for free.
That was amazing. All right, so you mentioned presence. It's something I've been fascinated with, trying to define it and figure out how I can improve my sense of presence. And I actually asked Jay the Ripper. You know, he has a really strong presence, and as do you. And you can just
you
can just tell when one of you guys are there in a bar, you know, it's just everything kind of gravitates towards you. I can't figure out how you manage to do this. Maybe it's acquired. Maybe it's something you were born with. So how would you define presence? How charisma might fit into that, personality, all that stuff?
Absolutely, Evan. You know, some of the basic skills that we focus on, and it's funny you mentioned Jay the Ripper, because I've met Jay on a number of occasions, and as much heat as he gets, as much bullshit as he takes, you know, he is just a fucking cool guy. You know, I gotta say that. I have no reason to kiss anybody's ass. When I met him, I just knew instantly that this guy had it. You know, he was just one of those guys I defined as cool. And if we deconstruct it further, coolness for me and presence and charisma can really be broken down into the simple, such as a good vocal tonality, the rate of your speech, how loud you speak, how commanding is your voice. Also, it comes down to, you know, do you make good eye contact? Do you look people in the eye when you speak to them? You know, oftentimes you'll be speaking to someone whose eyes are shifty and they can't look at you. And unconsciously, that's registering with us in our minds that something is off with this person. I don't trust this person. Something is weird. So charisma and presence really comes down to those things, like your vocal tonality, your eye contact, your ability to remember people's names in conversations and to use people's names in conversations. And those things constitute your overall vibe. And if you have these things down, then you can take the material that we learn in the community and the game and apply it more effectively. You know, like doing the cube, for example, or, you know, whatever gambit you want to use, you know, hey, guys, da-da-da-da. You know, there's a big difference between, hey, guys, quick question. I gotta back to my friends real quick, but would you guys ever date a girl who's friends with us? I can't even understand what I'm saying myself. Versus, hey, guys, real quick. And I gotta get back to my friends here in 1 second, but I just, quick question for you. Would you guys ever date a guy who was still friends with his ex-girlfriend? There's a big difference there. Same shit, but big, big difference. And I think a lot of people are looking for the magic bullet solution. And until you have the proper, I guess, weapon to employ those bullets, then, you know, those solutions are going to be hard to come by.
Exercises that you might help, that might be of use to people to improve their tonality, handshake, eye contact, things of these nature. What would you recommend for a guy that's struggling with these aspects?
Absolutely. Evan, you know, when I was growing up, I couldn't even make eye contact with people. I was painfully, painfully shy, very sad, very depressed, just a total mess, actually. And what it comes down to is simply, I can give you an exercise to help you improve your eye contact. And I don't know where I got this exercise, or maybe it's a combination of exercises that I've heard in the past, but what we recommend people to do is they find themselves in a crowded area, say, like, if you're in Los Angeles, the Grove, or if you're in New York, you know, Times Square, wherever there's going to be a lot of people walking up and down. Actually, in New York, anywhere you go, there's plenty of people to see. And what you want to do is simply make eye contact with everyone that passes you by, okay? When you make eye contact with everyone, and you make sure to hold your eye contact to tolerate that pressure until they look away first, It's a real important exercise to do. You can do it for as little as 15 minutes a day, or as much time as you have. The more time you do it, the better off you'll be. You'll notice as you do this eye contact exercise that you'll notice three contingencies popping up. I'd say in about 90% of the interactions that you encounter, people will not even make eye contact with you. Say in about another 5% of those, 5% of those encounters, they'll look at you, you'll look at them, and they'll look away first. And then the remainder of the encounters is when you'll lock eyes with people. And that's when it gets really interesting. Let's say you lock eyes with a guy, and you reach that point of discomfort where it's like, okay, we're staring at each other. What you do in that situation is you simply acknowledge. And acknowledge that there's another alpha male in the room. If you're down the street and you made eye contact with somebody, and you said, hey, what's up? You know, it simply breaks the tension, lets you both know you're there, and you just go about your business. If it's a woman, it's a slightly different contingency. If a woman makes that eye contact with you and holds it, well, you smile to break the tension. But what this is doing is really building your tolerance to social pressure. The ability to look somebody else in the eye triggers an unconscious response inside our minds. But in order to be effective and develop charisma and presence and to gain trust and rapport with people, it's really important that we look them in the eye and be able to withstand eye contact. Because one of the key telltale signs of people who aren't honest or who are untrustworthy is that they can't look you in the eye. So that's one exercise that we do for eye contact. Another exercise, and I'll just move on to vocal tonality just real quick, is I give my students a very, very simple acronym to keep in mind or even write on their hands as they go about their day, and that's LSD, which stands for louder, slower, and deeper. You know, repetition is the mother of all learning. And if we constantly remind ourselves, LSD, louder, slower, deeper, eventually this conscious exercise will seep into our conscious and become part of who we are as a person. We'll start speaking more loudly, more slowly, more deeply, and more effectively.
Cool. So you had mentioned you might address men differently than women. So let's move on to that aspect of building rapport with a man and building rapport with women. A lot of guys who enter the community have a tough time and struggle with either of these skills, and they're a little different and unique. So how would you address these?
So that's a good question, Evan. Dealing with men and women initially is really, it's really very similar in the beginning when you're introducing yourself to somebody. You know, the most important thing you want to do is, you know, give them a firm handshake. Certainly look them in the eye when you greet them. And I think also just having an openness about you. Like, I know this is kind of getting into the woo-woo, but just not caring too much about what other people think about you. But at the same time, seeking to enrich their experience. You know what I mean? I think when it comes to someone who's what we define as cool, and can I go off on this tangent real quick? Because
sure.
This is on the top of my head. And it kind of correlates to the discussions between men and women. You know, people talk about coolness. Oh, that guy's cool. Oh, that guy's a cool car. That chick is fucking cool. Blah, 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 blah. And when you think about what the fuck does cool mean? You know, in our society, coolness is an ascribed status. Some people see coolness as driving a certain type of automobile or what that means about the person because they do a certain thing or they drive a certain car. I like to see coolness as something a little bit different and a little deeper. Coolness is all about how you affect the people around you and how you enrich the experience of the lives of the people around you. And, you know, I've been told I'm a pretty cool guy, and I'm always flattered to hear that. And I try to deconstruct what does cool mean. And of all the cool people I've met, I've started to see these patterns of people who are just generally cool. And these are those patterns. And number one, cool people try to be givers in life versus takers in life. You know, they try to give first versus take first. And life is all a give and take. When I say givers, I'm talking about giving of emotional energy. Like wanting to get to know other people, being genuinely interested in other people, asking them questions about themselves. So, you know, coolness is an subscribe status, and it's about how you make the other person feel. So, again, it's your intentions. Do you seek to give value in this interaction versus taking value first? Again, we're all givers and takers at different times. But if you've ever met somebody who, for some reason, you feel like you just want to kind of watch your back, that's what I define as someone who's a taker. Additionally, someone who's cool has a good tolerance to social pressure. You know, he's not overly concerned about what other people think about him or her. He or she goes through life and just has a calm confidence about him. It's just relaxed. Hey, let's do this. Let's do that. It's all good. You know, I'm not overly concerned about what other people are thinking about me. Because when you're overly concerned about other people thinking about you, then you're acting like as if you're in a cage. You know, and cool people just have this certain freedom and air about them that, hey, whatever we do, it's all good. Whatever I choose to do, you choose to do, it's all good. What you're doing isn't necessarily going to affect me, and what I'm doing isn't necessarily going to affect you. But let's see if we can make something happen together. And the third trait of cool that I've seen in most people who, you know, that I've seen who I define as cool are, they have a certain indifference to social outcomes. You know, they're marching to the beat of their own drummer. You know, if everybody's going to be at this certain club, they may go to a different club because that's just what they do. You know, they're not overly concerned about being at the coolest place because they're doing their thing. And that is what, you know, in my mind translates into a certain magnetism about them. They march to the beat of their own drummer. They're not overly concerned about what other people think about them. And finally, they seek to give value in interactions before taking value. And that's what really constitutes a cool person to me.
And what would you define value as?
Value, the way I look at value, it's more about emotional value. You know, about how you make the other person feel. Am I trying to take something from this person? Or am I trying to enrich this other person's experience of life? Now, I'm not talking about when in terms of giving value, I'm not talking about, you know, handing out gift certificates at the mall. You know, hey, here's value. Here's a fucking gift certificate and that bullshit. I'm talking about just being present when you meet somebody else. You know, giving them a firm handshake, looking them in the eye, you know, orienting your body towards them when you speak to them. You know, being there, because that's just, it's just giving them a modicum of respect that I believe everyone deserves. And I'm sure you've all met people in the past that, you know, you met them and are like, wow, this person just kind of blew me off. That's not cool. That's taking value. And you can instantly read a value taker when they just instantly blow you off as soon as they find out that there's someone else more important to talk to in the room. And those are the kind of people I try to stay away from.
All right. So I think we were talking about men versus women. And I don't know if we ever answered that.
Yeah.
So how would you interact differently with a man versus woman?
Initially, Evan, it's really very much the same. Having that positive intent when you first interact with somebody and thinking, you know, how can I enrich this person's experience of life? Whether it's by simply being present when I'm introduced to them, or if I can maybe share something of value with them that I have that I'm willing to share with them. Because I find that when you are willing and open to share value with other people in this world for free, it always comes back to you without any expectation of reciprocation. Things always come back to you tenfold. Maybe it's a law of attraction. I don't know what it is. But, you know, when you go out there and you just give positive energy, it always comes back to you. When you go out there and give negative energy, well, it always comes back to you as well. So starting with a positive intent is really important. Having that value-giving mindset, whether you're meeting a man or a woman, is really, really important towards making friends, building connections with people, and, you know, eventually, you know, meeting people who we want to hook up with, being women. On a more practical note, how do we establish ourselves when we meet people? I think it can be accomplished by having a good handshake, whether it's with a man or a woman. Whether it's with a man or woman, I think having a good, strong tonality and also having good eye contact to indicate that we are present when we're, you know, interacting with the other person. Now, when it comes to differences later on in dealing with men, especially, I think a lot of guys in the community, and this is something I've really seen, is they need to be the guys, become the guys, those masculine guys that they were always jealous of growing up. You know, let's face it, a lot of guys in the community are fucking, you know, gaming guys, and you know, I'm not knocking that, but hey, playing video games just isn't as masculine as, you know, playing baseball. And I mean, and who am I to say? Who am I to say? Or maybe lifting weights or doing something masculine that builds your testosterone versus fucking eating a bag of chips in World of Warcraft, you know? Anyway, there was a South Park episode that talked about that was pretty, summed it up pretty nicely. So when dealing with guys, I think it's important to be really masculine, really present. Let them know that they're dealing with a man. And because it all instantly garners other people's respect. When you speak to them like a man, you speak with a good voice, you look them in the eye, give them a good handshake, and then you just shut up. You don't worry about filling the space. Because if you can demonstrate to other guys that you can tolerate the pressure of just being there, they'll respect you. But if you're the guy that goes in a club and you're like, hey, oh my God, what are we doing? Are we going to open that set? Or are we going to do this? Nah, what are we standing around for? Then you become the pain in the ass. It's not as cool. When you can, you know, guys, we just want to relax. We just want to relax, you know. If we can just learn how to be more chill and with other guys and not worry about what to do next, then I think, you know, we all get along with each other better. When it comes to, and maybe the difference in terms of interacting with women, I think really the difference there is also in intent. Beyond just having that initial positive intent, letting them know that we are interested in them romantically, sexually, whatever it is, and finding the strength and courage to do that. Because let's face it, a lot of us guys in the community were raised to feel ashamed of our sexuality. And it's something that I've definitely struggled with. You know, I was raised Catholic, and growing up in our American society, I thought, well, you know, it's wrong to look at a naked woman. It's wrong to want to fuck somebody. It's wrong, you know. I should be ashamed of my sexual desires, you know. Jerking off, that's a bad thing. Oh my God, you're going to go to hell for that. You're going to have hairy palms, whatever. Yeah, right. Come on now, you know. And I think, you know, I hope I'm answering this question okay, because it's kind of impromptu, but I think it's really finding the strength inside to convey that intent. And that's something that I think the community is really gearing towards nowadays, is letting girls know, hey, we like you. We want to be with you. And how do we go about doing that effectively?
So, along those lines, do you feel that those guys that are like big on routines versus, you know, the quote, inner game guys, is there something to be said for routines, or do you think that they're just a crutch and should be abandoned as quickly as possible?
Well, Evan, I think this whole debate between the natural game and the routine game, and I think honestly it's more of a commercial dichotomy. You know, some companies are all about, oh, we do natural game, and some companies are, oh, we want to give you a script of routines that have been proven, field tested to work, that will net you the results that you wanna achieve. Well, my thinking is, everything we do in life is a routine. Hello is a routine. How do you do is a routine. So I don't draw such a hard line between the two. I think routines, when used effectively, can be extremely, extremely powerful. But in order to use them effectively, you have to have a good foundation of social skills, a good verbal tonality. You just have to be able to talk effectively, you know, and be able to convey a good presence. Because at the end of the day, it's not about what you say, it's how you say it. And I can talk about some bullshit that's fucking boring, but vary my tonality slightly, and I can totally suck you into it. Almost like NLP and that hypnosis stuff, but I'm not really into that stuff. But let's face it, you know, when we talk in an interesting manner, people will listen to us regardless of what we're talking about. I might be talking about just total bullshit right now, but as I get excited about what I'm talking about, as I lower my tonality and increase my tonality, lower the rate of my speech, raise the rate of my speech, you know, whatnot. So much is conveyed by doing that. And I use a lot of routines. One of my favorite routines is the cube. And I absolutely love doing it.
So while you're mentioning the cube, talk about cold read in general and the power of cold reads.
Sure. Cold reading is one of my favorite, I guess, routine sets to use in interacting with people, whether it's men or women. And I think one of the things that differentiates an effective cold read from an ineffective cold read is the rapport that you have with the other person. It's not about the words that you say necessarily, because let's face it, most cold reads or standard cold read lines apply to everybody. But I think one thing that guys in the community sometimes miss is that unless they have a minimum amount of rapport with the other person, which equals trust, that their cold reads aren't going to hit as effectively. I mean, I literally have girls call me a year later after I've done the cube on them, and they'll ask me, what does this mean again? Can you do the cube on my friend? And I always say, well, that takes a lot to do. And, you know, I just tell them to go get the book, which is the Ann Gottlieb book published some years ago, I think back in 2003 or 2004, which is a great book. And so when it comes to cold reading, if you really want to get good at cold reading, which I think is a fine thing to do because it's really effective, is to remember that when you have rapport with the other person first, cold reads will come off as so much more effective, and that efficacy of the cold reads will be attributed to you and make you look all that much cooler.
Could you give like a little rundown of what the cube is and how you implement it into your seduction?
Absolutely. A lot of guys will just go up to a girl or, you know, a couple girls, or usually just one girl, and say, hey, have you heard of the game called the cube? And they're like, no. Well, okay, well, think of a picture for a second. And notice there I'm not really doing anything to build any value into the cube. And I can't believe I'm putting this on audio, but fuck it. Here we go. This is one of my favorite things to do. I hope if you're a female out there and I've done this to you, forgive me. But it's a great game. So when I do the cube, the first thing I ask, once I establish rapport with the person that I'm doing the cube on, is I'll do it as if I'm doing it to you. Hey, Evan, have you ever heard of this game called The Cube?
No, I've never heard of this.
Well, The Cube is a game. It's a visualization game, which is Sufi in origin. And what it entails is me asking you to describe a series of images in your head. This game was actually popularized a number of years ago in a book, oddly enough, known as The Cube, Shaped Like a Cube, written by Ann Gottlieb, and you can find it on Amazon.com. Now notice I'm lending legitimacy to the game. What will happen is I'll ask you a series of questions to describe a series of images in your head. And based on the images that you describe to me, I bet that I can tell you things about yourself that even your best friends and family don't know about you. And perhaps a glimpse into the deepest, darkest secrets within your subconscious. Are you ready to take this journey with me?
Okay, I'm ready.
Well, I have to first of all say that this is for entertainment purposes only. This is not to be construed as psychological advice. Such advice should only be sought after by a qualified professional, which I definitely am not. So that's how I lead into the cube. Now notice, even in just the lead in itself, I've built a lot of intrigue into it, and I've really kind of sucked the person in. I've also made it kind of funny. You know, because, you know, let's face it, all this stuff is kind of funny, you know. And, you know, deep down inside, I know the other person I'm doing it to doesn't really think I'm some fucking mind reader. But it's a fun exercise. And when I do the cold reads towards the other person, I always give them positive reads. You know, because there is an element of truth to everything that we read from somebody. And we want to reinforce whatever positive qualities that we see in this person through our cold readings, and try to dismiss the negative qualities. Because at the end of the day, we're here to, lift people up and not bring people down.
Excellent. All right, let's move on to building a social circle, a network of friends and lovers or girlfriends. Can you give some advice on that?
Absolutely. You know, one of the areas I really love to work within and I believe specialize in is building a social circle from the ground up. Like, as if I took you from the life that you are leading right now, and in many cases this is very much what you're going through right now in the community, where you're abandoning old relationships, dysfunctional relationships, and forging a new life path and creating new relationships, relationships with the people, building a social circle is one of the best ways to meet people of the opposite sex, because frankly, how do people meet? They meet through their friends. You know, they meet in church or they meet through work, all of which are examples of social circles. Now, Dale Carnegie, in his book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, I think came out in 1915, gave a lot of great examples as to how to, you know, build your presence and charisma and how to build your social circle from scratch. But we're in the information age now. We are at a stage in humanity where the things that are bringing us close to each other, such as Facebook and MySpace and chat and the iPhone and text, I mean, I can literally call somebody in the Philippines or France right now and be talking to them in a matter of seconds. Now, this email, this chat, this stuff that we have, despite, you know, it's ironic how this stuff really brings us closer on one level, but on a different level actually pushes us further away. Because you can't really email a smile. You can't hug someone over the phone. And you can't make love to someone, you know, in a letter. Well, maybe you can, but, you know, for most of us, we can't. So how to build a social circle from scratch? Well, first of all, you have to be a cool person. And we kind of went over that earlier. From there, I like to employ what I call a social vehicle. And a social, an effective social vehicle really has three components. The first component to an effective social vehicle is that it has to have a wide appeal to both men and women. The second component to a good social vehicle is that it has to be easily accessible to both men and women. And finally, a good social, and I'm presuming that you want to meet both men and women, I'm assuming. And the third component of an effective social vehicle has to do with the fact that it's easily repeatable. Now, the best way to explain this is to describe the social vehicle in action. And I'll describe one of my social vehicles, which is wine. I've been a, you know, amateur wine taster for several years now. I've been collecting wine for many years, and I host wine tastings from time to time, and it gets people together, and I can talk to other people who are interested in wine and learning about wine. I'm actually going to start teaching classes pretty soon on just a very small scale to a lot of community guys, actually, because I think it's an area which is very interesting to women and, frankly, very interesting to men, and knowing a little bit about wine is something that can make you, you know, a more interesting person. So wine is a great social vehicle. Let's take a look at the three components. Number one, is it easily accessible to both men and women? Well, of course. You can buy a bottle of wine for $2 at Trader Joe's, or you can buy a bottle of wine for $150 at your local wine shop. Number two, does it have a wide appeal to both men and women? Well, yeah, men love wine. Jesus turned water into wine. You know, women love wine. You always see women at wine bars and wine tastings. And thirdly, is it easily repeatable? Well, yes, because in Los Angeles, where I live, there are a multitude of wine bars. There's tons of wine tastings. And if you're in an area where there aren't a lot of things such as that, then you can host them yourself, which I do as well. And if you look at those three things, and eventually what will happen is you'll start bringing people into your life who have a similar interest with you. And what you do there is you simply, you know, get their contact information, you invite them out to whatever event that's taking place that revolves around wine or whatever your social vehicle is. And eventually, you know, by virtue of repetition and having a common interest to talk about, you eventually develop your social circle. And it's as simple as that. Using the social vehicle effectively, making sure your social vehicle fits the three criteria, and applying yourself. Applying yourself, applying yourself. Now, if we take a look at a social vehicle that isn't so effective, that could be, I know it's going to garner a lot of boos here, but video games. Do video games have a wide appeal to both men and women? Not really. Mostly dudes play video games, and that's the way it is. Are video games easily accessible to both men and women? Well, you know, you could say, you could argue both ways, but I'd venture to guess probably not. You know, it's mostly, you know, teenage boys to men in their, mostly in their maybe early to mid-20s, maybe some in their 30s are buying expensive video game consoles. And finally, is it easily repeatable? It is actually easily repeatable because you can play games fucking 24/7. But is it going to lend to you building a social circle? Is it going to lend to you meeting members of the opposite sex? Is it something that's interesting to both members of the opposite sex? Not as much. Therefore, it's not as effective social vehicle. So that's it in a nutshell when it comes to building your social circle. It's all in the application.
Cool. You personally, like, what's been, in your journey, the most powerful experience you've had as far as your ability to progress as a man or a sociable human being on this planet? I know you probably want to think about this for a minute.
Evan, you keep hitting me these questions, and I swear it's awesome because it's really causing me to think, and this whole interview has really been off the cuff, so I apologize for all the ums and uhs, but I was trying to just really speak from the heart here. For me, well, one of my biggest accomplishments as a man has really to become the guy that I was always envious of as a kid. The guy who people trusted. The guy who people look up to. And the guy who people loved and respected. Because growing up as a kid, as a teenager, even as a young adult, I didn't have any of those things. I mean, I was a virgin until my mid-20s. I grew up with very, very low self-esteem. And it's always been a struggle. You know, I've dealt with depression and all sorts of different crap. But eventually, as I got into my late 20s and early 30s, I found myself becoming that guy that people just wanted to be around. People always had nice things to say about me, which I really still appreciate to this day. And I try to do the same for other people. I try to uplift them and try to be relentlessly positive around other people, because at the end of the day, it's not about, you know, what you got, it's what you give. You know what I mean? And becoming that guy, and believe me, I still have a long way to go, but I've made some strides. And at this stage of my life, at the age of 36, I can say that is probably my greatest accomplishment, that I've turned that aspect of my life around. And, you know, my next goal is to be married in the next few years and raise a family. So that's kind of my ultimate goal, and pass along this love to a new generation.
Oh, well, again, I deeply appreciate you spending time with me today. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Evan, really appreciate the opportunity, and I think what you're doing is a great thing here, and I really want to acknowledge and respect you and you know, really tell you I respect you a lot for doing this, and I just want to say thank you as well.
And to read more information by Ulysses, visit socialfundamentals.com.